Ms. Eliadis? Did I pronounce that correctly?
That's correct, Your Honor. It's almost good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Rosa Eliadis. I represent Mr. Mansa Newton Baptiste. He's the defendant appellant in this case, and we are appealing the district court's ruling on our motion to dismiss under 8 U.S.C. 1326D. Mr. Baptiste was charged with illegal reentry, and the law has established that under Section D, you have a right to challenge the basis for the deportation or for the underlying charges, which would be the deportation. In this situation, Mr. Baptiste filed a motion to dismiss alleging that his initial deportation proceedings violated his right to due process and that he was prejudiced. The facts are very simple and undisputed. This is dealing with a deportation from 1998 of a legal lawful permanent resident, which is an LPR, after an erroneous conviction was entered against him, and he entered into a stipulated waiver of removal when he was uncounseled and he met with the authorities from the Immigration Department for approximately 10 minutes and was told to sign this and he'll go back to his country quickly.
How many times did he re-enter?
He re-entered approximately 4 times, Your Honor.
Approximately.
So, well, that sort of raises the question, even if he can successfully collaterally attack the first illegal reentry conviction, which is what this argument is aimed at, he's got two others before this one.
And the precedent has established that reinstatement of a previous defective deportation is still not valid. I mean, that is actually cited in Mendez-Lopez that's cited in our brief. So the underlying point is the initial deportation can be challenged even after somebody subsequently entered the country. There's no precedent to say that.
He had two other opportunities to challenge it, too, on the other deportations, right?
The opportunities were there if he knew they were there, and that's the underlying basis of the challenge to this deportation proceeding. He was not made aware that he had any rights to challenge this deportation. He submitted an affidavit that the district judge specifically addressed and never said that he didn't find what was in the affidavit incredible. The affidavit was not controverted by anybody. But simply on the basis of the allegations, he found that the waiver was still considered and intelligent. And he still, the judge, was still determining or made a determination that that initial waiver was considered and intelligent. He didn't go beyond any of the other factors. And that's what I think this court has to revisit because of the fact that there is no dispute as to how this took place. Now, there are cases that have been overturned that had subsequent deportations. And the reinstatement, again, of a previously defective deportation is not valid. So, in essence, he had to prove mainly that his deportation violated his due process rights. And he established that with his affidavit that was uncontroverted. There's case law that clearly establishes it was an invalid waiver in the cases cited, Ramos, Gomez, and Ubaldo Figuera. There's no precedent in this actual court that addresses the validity of a waiver.
There will be. Go ahead.
Okay. And in this situation, the Ramos cases that are cited and the other cases that have addressed the same issue are completely in support of the finding here. Even though the other cases announced a different burden of proof, The Ramos's case and Gomez and Uvalde are out of the Ninth Circuit. There are other cases out of a different circuit. The Third, Sixth, and Ninth. They held that the burden of proof on this waiver is on the defendant. However, those cases did not deal with a scenario where no evidence, where evidence was put forth by the defendant and was not refuted. So in this situation, the defendant met his burden of proof to establish the invalid waiver. And the only thing that remained from there to prove that it was fundamentally unfair is that he was prejudiced. And one of the most salient factors in this case is that the reason he was deported was for a delivery of a controlled substance that was a judgment from state court that was improperly entered. And this was held to be an aggravated felony and precluding him from relief. Now, certainly if he had an attorney that could have helped him understand that he could challenge that, that could have actually looked up the transcripts as we did and found out that it was a mere possession conviction and not a delivery conviction, there's a possibility of a difference in the outcome. And that's all we have to establish under precedent. To establish prejudice, we just have to establish there's a potential possibility for a different outcome.
But he's not really claiming that he didn't understand the waiver or that it wasn't translated for him. His first language is English, as I understand it, and the waiver was in both English, his first language, and in Spanish. He's saying he didn't read it.
He's saying he didn't read it, Your Honor, and that it was not explained to him.
Well, that's not really necessary if the document itself says that it was and that he understood it and that he signed it. The fact that he attests to not having read it is on him. That can't be a failure in the process he received when he signed the waiver.
Well,
I mean, if he made a colorable claim that he didn't understand, then we might have a different case if we were to follow the Ninth Circuit's rule, but he's not making that claim. So even if we were inclined to follow the Ninth Circuit's rule, his claim is different. He just said, I didn't read it.
He said, I didn't read it, and it was never explained to me. So I guess
he's not attesting to any lack of understanding. The document says that, you know, I read and understood everything.
Right.
It's been explained to me. I sign on the dotted line. I waive my rights.
I agree.
And
he
said, out the door he goes.
I guess it's kind of circuitous to argue what the document said when he said he didn't read it. So
you're charged with having read something that you signed, and we have to accept what he attests to by virtue of his signature on the waiver form.
And in those,
so unless he's challenging that he was, you know, he signed under duress, you know, something like that, his signature is an attestation that he understood his rights.
Well, those facts were specifically addressed in the Ninth Circuit cases, and they did deal with the fact that there was a signature. Just because it was in a different language, that wasn't the basis in which they held it was involuntary.
Well, there was a claim that he didn't understand his rights in the Ninth Circuit case of Ramos, as I understand it, because of a failure of translation. And we don't have any claim of that nature or even a similar claim here. We just have a claim that I didn't read it, which is contradicted by his signature on the document. So that can't possibly carry his burden of proof.
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor, because of the fact he said it was never explained to me also. This is a very complex area of the law, and just so the court understands, the law at the time and the law presently says when the immigration court or the immigration judge has a waiver that is signed by someone who's not represented by counsel, they have to personally assure themselves that the waiver was voluntary. And that's the basis that Ramos, Gomez, and the other Ninth Circuit cases are relying on. They're relying on that actual statute that was in place at the time, and they held that the IJ violated that statute. And it just stands to reason, just like we do in criminal court, we have to have a third party overlook this waiver. And the third party would have been the IJ, who dealt directly with the defendant or deportee and reassured himself or herself that this was, in fact, a valid waiver. That's all that would have needed to take place in this case, and it didn't. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Woodall?
Good afternoon. May it please the Court. Myrta Woodall for the United States. District Court did not in the denying the defendant's motion to dismiss. With regard to the willfulness of the waiver, Your Honor, the facts in this case show the defendant signed the waiver. This form was written in English, in a language that he knew and understood. There is no evidence that he was coerced or that he was in any way incompetent to sign this waiver. The defendant at the time was detained, and he was advised per the affidavit that his removal would occur more quickly if he signed the waiver, and so rationally he made the decision that that was the best option for him at the time. In addition, the defendant did not show that he was prejudiced. The only relief that the defendant is claiming is that he could have possibly been eligible to apply for a waiver or cancellation of removal, but those are both discretionary forms of relief. And this court has held previously that discretionary form that applying for a discretionary form of relief does not constitute the prejudice required to show fundamental unfairness under 1326D. Furthermore, the defendant was an aggravated felon at the time. He had multiple convictions for possession of a controlled substance, including one that occurred after the passage of IRA-IRA. He was not eligible for 212C as a result or for cancellation of removal. Moreover, the defendant did not exhaust his administrative remedies. He didn't contest his removal. He didn't appeal the 1998 order. He didn't file a habeas petition or a motion to reopen. After he was removed, he came back. He had plenty of time to do that again, and he didn't do so. When he reentered the third time, he was actually prosecuted for illegal reentry. He spent 37 months in the Bureau of Prisons, and he had plenty of opportunity to contest that 1998 removal, and he did not do so.
And the two later illegal reentries are independently sufficient to sustain this conviction?
That's a close question, Your Honor, because this case has a pretty complicated procedural history. So he was removed, then the second order of removal after that was a reinstatement. But the removal in 2005 was actually an expedited removal that was completely independent from the prior two orders. So arguably, yes, that did not actually rely on the prior 1998 removal.
Is it expedited when they just turn around at the border? What's expedited?
Expedited removal is when you are apprehended near the border. In the case of the defendant, he made a false claim to U.S. citizenship, and so the Immigration and Nationality Act allows for a removal that does not require a hearing before the immigration judge.
Send him right back.
That's right.
Right. He didn't get very far. They caught him at the border.
Correct.
Basically.
Right. So as a result, the record shows the defendant's removal was not fundamentally unfair. He was not deprived of judicial review, nor did he exhaust his administrative remedies. So the district court did not err in denying the defendant's motion. And if there are no more questions, we would just ask this court to affirm the defendant's conviction.
Thank you. Rebuttal, how much time? You've got less than a minute. Okay.
I want to correct something that counsel argued. She stated that in this district, discretionary relief does not qualify as a challenge to the deportation. You can't challenge it based on the fact you didn't get discretionary relief. That is true, but we're alleging that not as the due process violation, which is this court's precedent, that you can't use that as a due process. We're alleging it to establish the prejudice from this due process violation, the prejudice being the improperly entered waiver. So just to clarify that on the record, that's what this circuit law actually states, this court's law. I would like to briefly mention that since counsel argues regarding the last two elements, they kind of all beg the same question. If he didn't know what he was waiving, then he certainly possibly couldn't have exhausted his remedies and used it as a valid waiver for his judicial rights. And those That is specifically held in the cases that are cited in the brief because of the fact that it's kind of, again, a circular argument. You can't claim that you, that it's even very clear in the brief. You can't claim that, on the one hand, you should have had enough time to challenge this when, on the other hand, you're also claiming that they didn't need to keep you any longer because you waived your right to challenge it. So that's an example of an argument that kind of goes full circle on those last two, or actually listed as the first two elements in challenging the initial deportation. But I do assure the court that our understanding of the affidavit was that he was tricked because of the fact that he was not told what's in there. He just said, sign it and you'll go back. So I don't know that there is any other conclusion from those facts. And understandably, like I said, they're not disputed and there's not a credibility issue with them. So I would ask this court to reverse the district court's finding that the valid the waiver was knowingly and considered. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement. And Ms. Eliadis, you were appointed to represent your client on this case. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
The court thanks you for your service to your client and to the court. And the court will stand in recess until next Tuesday.